Hello and welcome aboard this podcast of RTÉ Radio 1's maritime programme Seascapes, which is presented and produced by Marcus Connaughton. You can email the programme seascapes@rte.ie. Hello and welcome aboard this week's edition of your maritime programme Seascapes. This week, we'll hear the second part of our conversation with the distinguished maritime artist Kenneth King, whose exhibition of paintings at the Sirius Art Centre in Cove, Vitality of the Sea, concludes this weekend. Mary McBrien talks to Michael Clark at Loch Erne Yacht Club, where the Heritage Boat Association recently gathered. As Ballyhome Yacht Club plays host to the Zic Laser Irish National Championships, we congratulate Finn Lynch, who last weekend became the under-19 Laser Standard World Champion, as he heads for Spain and Cantabria. In a moment, we'll hear about the ISAF Sailing World Championships in Santander. This weekend, in his birthplace of Liscannor, inventor of the submarine John Philip Holland is being honoured, marking the centenary of his passing. And we'll have a full report on next week's maritime programme. So to the north of Spain and the majestic seaport and city of Santander, which is hosting the ISAF Sailing World Championships. On a recent visit there, we talked to Spanish Olympic sailor Jane Abascal, but first to the mayor of Santander, Inigo de la Serna.
This sailing championship is a very big event for us. It's a great opportunity, you know, to let Santander be known in the rest of the world. This is a region which have had a lot of great professionals, great sailors, as Jane Abascal, and we have a very great tradition with sailing, and we have a beautiful bay. Our bay is one of the, it belongs to the club of the most beautiful bays in the world, with different types of wind, which made sailing a great, experience. No? So it's very important for us also, you know, the international projection that we are going to have with the championship. We have also a great port, which is very important for our economic activity. So it's one of our big reference for us, the commercial activity in our port. So it's very nice also to have time to see, you know, like the ships for fishing, close to the boats for sailing, or the big, you know, ferry which goes to Plymouth and Portsmouth. We also have in another part of the maritime front a big equipment, which is the Center Botín, which is going to be a cultural equipment, probably our most important cultural equipment, with an international projection also, and with a very huge investment of about 80 million euros. The architect is well known, is Renzo Piano, the author of The Shard in London, and this is his first work over here in Spain. We are, you know, anxious to see the building that flies over the bay, working, opening. And it's a great opportunity for a city which is a small city, but with ambition. It's very difficult to introduce him because he's, he is the symbol of the sailing in Santander. No? He was a great professional when he was active, he was sailing. He's also a reference for the Keys, because we are doing a lot of work with the kids, with different activities between the Sailing Federation and the municipality. We know it's going to be a success if Jane is in charge of it.
This is the most important sailing event in the world. Only Olympics is more important, but this is in some aspects is even bigger than Olympics, because in Olympics you can have only 400 sailors, 380 exactly. And here we will have 1,470 sailors. So for the organizing committee, it's a difficult event to organize, but a very nice event. We are very lucky because this World Championship arrived in a good moment, because as the mayor said, the maritime front is changing. Is we have a new maritime front, and we could have we could prepare the infrastructures we need to have a very nice place for the boats to leave the to go to the water and to come. And this is very nice because we can have a very compact event. That this is important for the media and for spectators and for the International Federation.
And of course, the International Federation has hosted these championships in many other cities, but for it to come to Spain is very important. And of course, you have a great sailing tradition in this country going back hundreds of years.
Yeah, I think this is one of the reasons because we won the election. We have a lot of tradition organizing events like the Volvo, like the Barcelona World Race, like the America's Cup, and with big success. And also Santander. Santander has a lot of tradition in sailing. Many sailors from many years. And it's nice to see our bay full of sails almost every day, but especially in the weekend. So I think it's one of the reasons because the International Federation gave us the championship. We are very happy because we have a very nice sailing school. The young people is learning here in our sailing school. It's from municipality, the sailing school. Some of them are world champions in Olympic classes and will participate here in the Worlds. So we are very happy for that. The first day of competition is the 12th, but the opening ceremony will be on the 11th. And the last day of sailing competition will be the 21st with the medal races. That will be very special because we have built a very nice grandstand there to see the races, just really close. As never the spectators have seen the races so close than will be here. My father was had a jar. He built a boat, small boats, wooden boats, and I had the opportunity to begin, and I enjoyed. And then, well, I'm here, bit by bit. You begin to compete, winning some races, and then winning Olympics, and this is all.
Sailing maestro Jane Abascal, and earlier we heard from Mayor of Santander, Inigo de la Serna. We wish all our sailors the very best in the testing waters of the Bay of Biscay off Santander in the ISAF Sailing World Championships. Last week on Seascapes, we talked to maritime artist Kenneth King about his adventures at sea as a chaplain. This week, his career as a distinguished maritime artist now based in Glencolumbkill in Donegal. And we talked about the kinship aboard a vessel on the high seas.
The team spirit. We were all in together. As I've said to Marianne, it didn't matter if you were the chaplain, the doctor, the ordinary seaman, radar operator, whatever, the Navy was the common bond, and that took precedence, which was very healthy. So it was a great bond, great spirit, most enjoyable, you know, yeah. Team spirit is a great thing.
So coming ashore, that must have been something of a wrench for you when it happened, but you've never lost your contact with the sea.
No, and indeed with former shipmates as well, chaplains and others. right to the present day. In fact, at the just recently, my principal chaplain when I was in the Navy, who later became Bishop of the Forces, has just written his memoirs, you know, going back over his time as a seminarian towards the end of the war. But he opted to go into the merchant service. He was on one of the last convoys across the Atlantic, so on. And he goes right through the whole business and into his time in the Royal Navy, and eventually to Bishop of the Forces, which was a stunning insight into that period of life from about the late 20s to the 80s.
So where did the painting begin?
Well, I always say it was the late developer in the family, because my late father and two brothers were professional artists and so on. It started with the sketching and the drawings. So I used to do that, and then we'd have sort of sessions of drawing in the smaller ships, you know, and it was a great way to document ports, you know, here and there, buildings, that sort of thing. And there was a great enthusiasm amongst the sailors, quite a lot of them interested in drawing, you know. So that's where it started. And then when I opted to jump back into the pews from the pulpit, so to speak, I just carried on, inched into marine painting in oils, you know, what I got addicted to. So it was from drawing, from sketching, quick sketches, gradually into oils. It didn't start with the sea initially when I was trying to generate some income, because it's hairy, you know, trying to start a career in art in the country. So I was doing a lot of the vernacular architecture around Glencolum Kill and some of the last of the thatched cottages, vestiges of the clackens of the famine time, that sort of thing, to generate a bit of capital to enable me to deal with the marine painting. And then I decided to target all the companies and so on in the country and say, look, I'm trying to paint ships and the history of shipping in Ireland. You know, appreciate if do anything you can commission-wise. BIM got back to me and said, you need to exhibit at the boat show. So I started off 1981 at the Dublin Boat Show in the RDS, and you had a sympathetic viewing public straight away, ships and boats and all that sort of thing, the sea. And that's where it started, and has been snowballing ever since, the Cork Boat Show, when it was in the agricultural grounds here. And then later on, Wexford, because of the seafaring tradition of Wexford. You know, Brian Clear, you dealt with the terrific book on Irish shipping they produced down in Rosslare. So it's been snowballing ever since. I've avoided the art world, Marcus. I've been targeting the maritime world. But it sort of enabled me to keep my nose above water, you know. There's a terrific tradition in the neighbouring island. Well, you know, they've got the Royal Society of Marine Artists, but I mean, they've had a great tradition. And there's some of those I'm very fond of. Obviously, with sailing ships, Jack Spurling and Montague Dawson, people like that. And then one I particularly like is Norman Wilkinson. He left a collection of the War at Sea to the National Maritime Museum, Greenwich, I think. Of the nation anyway. So they're ones that Wiley, there's quite a number of them in Britain. A great tradition, colonized maritime country, you know, that sort of thing. Whereas we don't seem to have the same amount. You know, we're a bit more landward looking, unfortunately.
Well, often when we build buildings, I even see with the new library in Dunleary, it's got its arse to the sea. And yeah. That, to me, says so much about what we do.
Yeah.
But you've had the distinction of having your paintings chosen by On Post.
Yeah.
For stamps. Obviously, you've taken a lot of the naval service vessels, and we're looking out here this evening on a dappled Hall Bolan with the sun shining in this historic building, the Sirius.
The Navy has always been very, very good in commissioning work and so on. I had the honour then of being commissioned to do the international review here in the harbour. So the Navy... The fishing fleet has been very good. I live in Glencolum Kill, not far from Killybegs, and that the skipper owners and crew members and so on have been very good over the years commissioning work. And so you know, those two. There's also the Maritime Institute of Ireland commissioned a series on the war at sea, documenting that. It's one of the things I find myself coming back to. There hasn't been a lot of visual documentation of our maritime heritage. Even there's the same hackneyed photographs of Irish ships during the war. Few hackneyed ones. None of them in convoy. None of them being torpedoed. None of them being sunk by submarines, you know, that sort of thing. So that's what I'm about. And that's what fires me. To get to try and visually document a whole a world that has passed in many ways, because as a little fella, another thing that I remember was the Irish Lights tenders towing down the light vessels, the Daunt going by, you know, Docky Island being towed by the Granny Whale down to her position here outside the harbour. So there's all that sort of stuff swilling around, and I'm in a bit of a time walk because I'm not wildly keen on the box boats. Yeah, seen one. They're different sizes, but they're roughly the same sort of.
You're a bark, a brig, and a schooner man, aren't you, really?
Well, yeah. Yeah. I'm indebted to other people. There's the late Dick Scott of Limerick, who was our authority on merchant sail, the last of merchant sail. And the other person is Captain Frank Ford of Dublin, who wrote the definitive work on the War at Sea, the Long Watch. And these two people have provided me with a lot of graphic material, you know, enabling me to try and construct scenes that had taken place. Frank Ford dealing with the shipping out of Wexford and Arklow. But remember, it was said that the Wexford sailors were more familiar with the streets of Odessa than Dublin because of the trade out from Wexford out to the Black Sea and up the Danube to take grain back to Wexford. You know, all this sort of stuff. The other thing is we've coloured the maritime histories of so many other countries when we weren't able politically or otherwise to do anything here at home. But the wild geese and the service of France and Spain and so on, the foundation of navies, Commodore Barry, Bernard O'Higgins, you know, all this sort of thing, Admiral Brown. We've really coloured a lot of maritime histories of other countries. So all that is, and then the other thing that gets to me and that I feel I wanted to get down was 1798. Now, it's always the land, the battles on, but there was a naval engagement in 98.
They had to get here.
They had to get here, and so on, you know. So the naval actions off Mayo and Donegal in 78, all right, too little, too late, you can argue the toss, but that's important. The famine emigration is important to me, you know. And then, I suppose, going back further, the Armada touching our shores in tragic circumstances. But that's part of our maritime history. And to try and document it visually is what sort of is niggling me all the time, you know. I want to get that something down. I'm fairly disciplined about the painting, you know, get at that daily, but dealing with some subjects, there's an awful lot of researching, and there's almost more time spent trying to get it as accurate or a scene, and then doodling around to try and get a composition. When it gets the actual painting, the subject, with shipping, anyway, it could be up to a week or 10 days to become satisfied with a finished work. Sometimes if you're lucky with a small one, you might get away with 3 or 4 days, you know, getting it done. But a lot of the historical stuff, it's the research, you know, going through 98 now, the Military Society of Ireland, their journal, The Sword, The Irish Sword, had some terrific articles, diaries of British officers and so on who are captured by the French, and they have put down there, and you get a whole idea of the feel of the sort of situation at Killala, or the last action off the Bell Mullet, or off the Mullet Peninsula in Mayo, and so on. Napertandy coming to Arranmore, you know. You get all these things.
You can see and read more about Kenneth King on the Seascapes webpage. Kenneth King, Life and Work by Marianne O'Kane Bowle is available in the bookshop of the Crawford Gallery in Cork and Liam Rochelle's and from the Four Masters Bookshop in Donegal Town. A fortnight ago, members of the Heritage Boat Association rallied from around the country in Lough Erne Yacht Club. Mary McBrien spoke with Michael Clark. He is, as he says himself, the titular admiral of the club and the club historian.
We have somewhere around 300 to 400 members, depending what way you count family members and things like that. We've been active in the business of organising racing for a fleet of sailing boats since about 1818. In other words, our 200th anniversary crops up in a few years' time. During all of that time, there's developed a strong traditions of building, designing and building fast racing yachts, which was a very active thing here among the gentry all around Lough Erne in the 1800s. And we have a number of quite historic fleets of boats of various kinds suited to sailing on Lough Erne. Most notable of those is a group of boats called the Fairy Class, Fairy Keel Boats. They are 23-foot keel boats, the perfect gentleman's racing yacht in Edwardian times. It's designed in 1902, and they had their first race here in June of 1906. With the former Enniskillen Yacht Club. And we have, at the minute, we have three afloat and racing, and we have another three or four very nearly ready to get out. And we had a big celebration of their 100th anniversary back in 2006. Where we're sitting at the minute actually is at the Crane Jetty at the club. And we're sitting in a spot which is interesting historically, because in this spot where we are sitting, if we were here in 1942, in the Second World War, there would be a row of wooden jetties. There's bits of them still there in the bushes. And there would have been what I'm told by Ted Jones, who was one of the pilots that flew here at that time and who lives in North Dublin. He says our boats were called pinnaces. They weren't just motorboats, they were pinnaces. A pinnace is a boat about 25 feet long that would be used for going in and out to a warship. Their warships were flying boats, Sunderland flying boats and Catalina flying boats. And just behind us over here, there's a couple of caravans mounted up on a concrete plinth. And on that same concrete plinth in 1942, 3-4, that sort of a period, there was a military hut. And in that hut is where the pilots came down to get their instructions about what they were doing that day and get their weather forecasts and all that sort of information. Then down to the pinnace and out to the flying boat. They arrived down there from the Manor House Hotel, which is about half a mile on to the north of us. And it's nowadays it's an hotel. In those days, it was the officers' mess of RAF Killadees. It was also reckoned as being the best place in Fermanagh to get invited to a party. And there were several writers who, at the time, who talked about that. Perhaps their biggest party was in May of 1941, when a couple of Catalinas arrived back after doing a patrol in which they had discovered or checked out the position of a German battleship called the Bismarck. And the Bismarck had given the Royal Navy one awful fright by sinking the Hood a few days before. And the Bismarck, once they knew where she was, they gathered everything that had a gun on it. And they set out, they flew out with planes that dropped torpedoes and things, and the Bismarck was sunk the next day. And there was, as I said, one hell of a party up in the Manor House, as it is now, the officers' mess. So our history is there's funny connections with war in our history, because the kind of yachts that were suitable for racing with was a kind of rig called a cutter. And the cutter rig, where the sails are arranged fore and aft, in other words, not a sail across the boat, like you would have seen in pictures of say, Norsemen sailing. But these sails were long, lengthwise with the boat, fore and aft, front and back. The cutter rig was developed in the latter part of the wars with the French. And whenever in 1818 part of the reason why we started racing was that those cutters were there, and there were a lot of gentlemen around who were various kinds of retired and surplus naval officers. So they, Fermanagh was useless for racing horses. If you want to race horses, go to Kildare. Fermanagh, humpy, lumpy, bumpy, muddy, water all over the place, can't race horses. Did try it, didn't really work. So they took the rules of racing horses and applied them to racing boats, cutters, which had cut their way to windward. And they raced in fleets of cutters, actually from an island just up round the corner here in East Donny, where Joey and Caroline Kelly live nowadays. Their little cottage there was the first headquarters for that yacht racing. And it was technology developed from war. You hop on ahead to the Second World War. One of the technologies developed there was marine plywood. And from marine plywood came things like the 1949 design of the GP14 racing dinghy. There's a lot about sailing and about the techniques and the equipment and the so forth that has a military background, in the sense that we are using what was military technology, naval technology. We're using it for peaceful sport. And a final point on that was that this place, in from 1942 to 1945, was the major training place for all flying boat crews in the RAF and in Coastal Command. Most of them were trained here. And now we spend a lot of time training young people in how to sail. Seems somehow appropriate.
Michael Clark of Lochearn Yacht Club talking to Mary McBrien for Seascapes. Next week here on Your Maritime Programme, we mark the centenary of the passing of John Philip Holland, inventor of the submarine, in Liscannor in County Clare and at the Marine Institute in Galway for the launch by the Central Bank of a 15 euro proof coin. And we're at the National Yacht Club in Dunleary, where Mary McBrien meets fellow first-timers getting out on the water in a 1720. All that and much more here on Your Maritime Programme Seascapes. Until next Friday night, tight lines and fair sailing.